My name is Ray Scannell. I'm a writer and performer.
And my name is Tom Creed. I'm a director, and I worked with Ray on the stage version of Deep.
Sir Henry's is an institution that used to exist in Cork and is still existing in people's kind of minds, and it just kind of sparked a culture for a decade. Yeah, the play just deals with the dance culture, but the venue itself was also an indie venue, and it was kind of probably most well known for hosting an early Nirvana gig. They supported Sonic Youth. I just wanted to try and capture the spirit of the place in a play, which I'd been meaning to do for years, but yeah, it felt about like the right amount of time away from. There was a 25-year kind of anniversary of it opening, which was coinciding with the play opening, happily enough. And yeah, so there was probably something in the air about trying to capture that time. And yeah, it was the kind of place in Cork where your parents didn't want you to go. So that's what made it all the more attractive. So.
I grew up in Cork. I'd be of a similar generation to Ray. I mostly listened to music that had guitars in it. And through college, I would have gone to Henry's on Wednesday nights and Friday nights, which were the indie nights, rather than the house night. And the house night was always a bit scary when I was growing up. I sort of wish now that I could go back and relive it all again. And I've got to know house music and the house scene, and developed a nostalgia for a kind of Cork that actually I never really experienced when I was living there. But it is the case, I think, that Cork in the 90s, there was really something in the air. And you know, that this was going on. There was a lot of music being produced. I was brought to see Enda Walsh's play Disco Pigs, which was originally produced by Kirkadurka, by school. Our Leaving Cert class was brought to see it. And it suddenly felt like this contemporary, edgy, creative culture was permeating all aspects of society. There was the Bodega had opened, which was this amazing bar venue. There was, already restaurants like Cafe Paradiso, and Seamus O'Connell was starting off there. So this kind of creativity was really bubbling up. And, you know, as a sort of somebody in my late teens, I could really feel that. And it was a really exciting place to be, even if you weren't going to Henry's on a Saturday night.
The title Deep is a play on words. It's to do with the deep house scene, which was the music that was played on the Saturday night in there, which kind of became famed for in the 90s. So that was the kind of music that was coming out of Chicago around the turn of the 90s. Your Frankie Knuckles and Marshall Jeffersons. And then when it hit the UK, your kind of Carl Cox's and the Europe scene with Laurent Garnier and stuff. And all those European DJs would have played in Henry's on the circuit through the years. And then the other play on words with it is that the rave scene was kind of seen as something quite shallow. You know, there was an ugly side to rave, but there was a kind of a cheap side of it as well, where rave bands would have come out like Liquid and some of the stuff coming out of XL, that UK scene, the kind of breakbeat scene, the Prodigy people, like these fellas, when kind of rave, for want of a better term, crossed over and became kind of pop music as we know it now.
I was director of Cork Midsummer Festival in 2013. And when Ray approached us, it just seemed like such a natural fit. People in Cork love music, and they love things about Cork, and they love stories that they can engage with. And the show ended up being a huge success. It sold out, it added extra performances, and there was a real appetite for it in the city.
It was all nations all nations of Fitzgerald's Park is the line in the play that kind of takes the mickey out of. But there was this kind of sense, it's a bit of a rave cliche again, that rave kind of embraces all race, creed, sexual preference. But Henry's on a Saturday night for 4 hours, what was that kind of place, you know? It didn't matter if you were from, like I'd be from a middle class enough background. Yeah.
There was an opportunity to revive it for the Dublin Fringe Festival and then for an Irish tour. And Ray asked me to work with him on that version of the show. So we reshaped the show a bit. We made it feel a bit more like a DJ set, which I guess is sort of the spirit of the radio version as well. And for me, it was an opportunity really to get to know a scene that I wasn't such a part of.
Didn't matter where you were from, really, it kind of attracted just that age group. So there was people from the north side, from Knocknaheeny, from Grána Brathair, the Glen, and then south side there would have been everyone from the suburbs, from Douglas, from Blackrock, from Monkstone, where I'm from. There was a big gang there. Yeah, so it catered for all human beings.
I think, you know, there were many people going there to hear the Pixies or the Sultans of Ping, or so this kind of rock, this sort of poppy rock music was also really a big part of Cork. And at the same time as the house music scene, obviously you had bands, the Sultans and the Franks, but also Micro Disney. You know, that there was this real scene, people like Carl Coughlin and Sean O'Hagan, kind of bringing art to pop music as well. And it just really sort of felt like it was a kind of edgy, interesting, exciting place to be growing up in.
Yeah, I mean, there's no escaping that the scene was associated with ecstasy and MDMA.
Ecstasy, or MDMA as it's properly known, is not a new drug. During the First World War, it was used as an appetite suppressant. Taken in tablet or capsule form, it's a derivative of amphetamines or speed and hallucinogens. The effect of the drug is to release serotonin neurons in the brain, which accounts for the associated feelings of well-being. In the last few years, ecstasy has become widely available in Ireland, from Donegal to Cork.
Young people as young as 15 and 16 years of age are now abusing it.
It's selling for £25 a tablet on the streets.
Rock and roll is dead. That's the view of a lot of young people. From Russia to the United States, it's been replaced by what they call a cultural revolution. Dance, house or rave music, an insistent beat with roots in ancient tribal rhythms.
You just get a rush up your spine every time you'd hear a good tune, you know?
If someone offers you a good time in a little white tablet, and you know you're sitting at home all week, and you take this thing and you're going to feel better than you ever felt before. You know, obviously, you're on thin ice.
What the play was trying to do was try to kind of see beyond the two extremes. There's kind of two accepted wisdoms about that scene. There's the kind of scaremongering kind of tabloid thing that it was all very dark, very dangerous. Of course, there was stuff that went on, and there was that side of it as well. But the other side, the other extreme then, of the kind of the rose-tinted glasses, people had a kind of this dream of the time that it was flawless and it was all good. So the play tries to kind of find the reality in between, you know. From a lot of the people that I interviewed for the show as well, there was a lot of people who didn't get into that scene, who didn't take the drugs and just had as good a night as the people who did.
You know, as part of working with Ray on this, I think, you know, we've really tried to make something that has a resonance for people who were there, for people who knew it, but also maybe for people who were outside it or have only ever heard of it as a legend. But it is the case that people were travelling from all over Ireland and from further afield to dance on a Saturday night in Cork in a little venue which has now been knocked down and is a car park by the river.
So the first people I approached were the resident DJs in there who kind of had started it off. This was Greg Dowling and Shane Johnson. They're Fish Go Deep and they're still producing records. They're still DJing away in Cork and just started a new night down there. Stephen Granger, who was the backbar DJ from the time I was going in there anyway. I would have been a kind of second, third generation of people going in there. So that was around the mid-90s. And then I just interviewed the manager, Sean O'Neill, and his wife now, Michelle, who also ran a pub in Cork called the Donkey's Ears, which was kind of like the pre-Henry's Bar for some nights. And just punters in general and house music fanatics, which there's no shortage of in Cork, just to get a kind of rounded picture of all aspects of it.
But it still lives on in people's memories and there's this amazing nostalgia for it.
There was, as far as I can remember, there was this no trainers policy at the door, but I also clearly remember everyone wearing trainers. So I think that was just like a kind of a way for the bouncers to have a code for it. They just don't like the look of a fella, no trainers, and kind of push them out. There was some wild, wild clothes and styles over the 90s. Like especially that earlier scene, which I wasn't part of, that I had to research a lot for the show. When it was all new, you know, the turn of from the end of the 80s into the 90s, when the dance scene started taking off, like people were wearing all sorts of stuff, like just day glow beanies. And there's one person I interviewed in the show, she said that she used to wear a swimsuit and denim hot pants and tights, just as a combination. So it was people making stuff up as they went along as well and embracing this new scene, but making it very much Ireland's take on it and very much Cork's take on it, which is two very separate things. I think what was new about it in terms of clubbing and going out was that it wasn't so much about the kind of cattle mart of scoring or, you know, it suddenly became about everyone in the room and as a unit dancing, you know, a communal thing. Whereas before it had been a bit of people checking each other out and courting. That became secondary. Not to say that that didn't go on in there. It's just that that wasn't what the atmosphere in the room was. It was about the music. It was about the dancing.
I know certainly when I was in college and in the couple of years after college working in the arts in Cork, you know, we were anticipating the city of culture. And I think, you know, those things that were happening in the 90s, the house music scene, things that were happening with food, Kirkadurka and the art scene that was going on, all of those things sort of were instrumental in making Cork the kind of city that could actually attract a designation like the city of culture. And, you know, a lot of us stayed around and, you know, Ray and I were both quite heavily involved in events around the city of culture, and then many of us moved on, as people do. And you know, the play also is a story of a moment and also a story of moving on and change and an attempt to move on, and people who are stuck in the past and people who have to move on.
I remember clearly these, which I don't know if they have anymore, these Carling Black Label bottles, which were pint bottles, but they were like little bombs, you know, they were tubular, cylindrical, black and anonymous. But yeah, I don't know if they do that style of bottle anymore. But
I think a pint bottle of Carling was a real Cork thing for a lot longer than they served them anywhere else, and everyone was moving to long necks, and even like Guinness was moving to long necks, but Cork was still drinking the pint bottle of Carling. And that right up to the end of Sir Henry's, that was the sort of drink of choice in there. I know an aunt of mine worked in there for many years, and you know, certainly there were probably fewer pint bottles of Carling sold on a Saturday night and more pints of water handed out. But I can certainly say that on the Wednesday nights and the Friday nights, when people were jumping up and down to guitar music, there was a lot of pint bottles of Carling served then.
Cork seems to go through phases, you know, goes through artistically and economically, just like reflecting the same as the rest of the country. But what emerges then out of that, you know, there's some interesting things coming out of Cork now in the last few years artistically, like Broken Crow Theatre Company and Eat My Noise, who are composer, dance, electronica kind of act. And it's just an interesting time again for Cork, where I don't know if it's as neat as these things emerge out of a dip in the economy, but that seems to be the pattern.
I suppose for the radio version, we've tried to keep a spirit of this idea of the piece being like a DJ set, except here it's more like a radio DJ set, where Ray is laying down tracks, is talking over them, is you know, bringing to life the different characters just by modifying his own voice, and also using clips from the media. So there's you know, if you listen carefully, you might find the Pope, Gay Byrne and Annie Murphy, extracts from an infamous RTE primetime documentary about the dangers of ecstasy and the rave scene, which was on at the time, and part of the scaremongering, I think, about the scene. So, you know, we've used these other media, and actually it works really well for radio, because of course somebody playing records and playing other audio clips and talking over them is what radio has always been. There's a reference in the play to this kind of DJing, which wasn't like a kind of old school Tony Blackburn intros and extras and talking over the tracks, but more it was just about the music and playing the music. And I suppose maybe we've tried to bring a bit of those two worlds together. But I think, you know, I hope that we really keep the integrity of the piece and the story of Larry and this Cork family and this generation growing up through this time of change in the city, and also this sense of euphoria and possibility that this music brought into a very grey and wet and depressed city, you know, which had just come out of the 80s, the closure of the Ford and Dunlop's factory. People were really looking for something to do. And then these records came over from Manchester and something happened. And for a few years, it felt like Cork was the place to be.